It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
So, let's talk about scarcity in media.
Scarcity of media or in media?
Scarcity despite media. Scarcity beneath media.
Okay.
Scarcity around media. I'm just picking prepositions now. No, we've discussed before the whole physical media versus digital media and things like this. And this is a real problem that a lot of people have, in that if you don't have a physical copy of something, it may go away.
Mm-hmm.
And they do.
Yeah.
There are video games that you can't play anymore. There are movies you can't. The great one that is upheld forever now is, for reasons I don't fully understand but involve copyright and rights to it, you can't see Dogma, the Kevin Smith movie. It's not available for streaming or for digital purchase or physical purchase firsthand, like retail, at all. And people get really bothered by this, understandably. Not specifically Dogma, but just in general. And sometimes it's very interesting. I have a copy of an Xbox 360 game that went so poorly they actually destroyed unsold copies.
Wow.
And so I suspect it might actually be worth something. And because of the backward compatibility with Xbox, I think I might be able to play it on my newest machine. I could play it on one of my old machines. It's not a very good game, so that's fine. But like, that could be worth something or whatever. And I do have that. That's nice. But in general, I don't give a shit about this thing as a concept, because there's plenty of others. I don't know. I mean, I do run into things like, oh, I can't see that movie. That sucks. But I'll watch other movies. And for the most part, if I care enough about wanting to watch a movie or play a game, I still remember it pretty well. And so I'm not that worried about it. So I'm very bad at bothering with this stuff. But I have exceptions, because sometimes there's something that I loved. Movies, this usually comes up, or TV shows. And I will occasionally look for them. There are a lot of sources now of where can you find shit to watch. Justwatch.com. Roku. My Roku TV has its own thing, and it'll search through all the streaming services it knows about for stuff. And I occasionally do that. And some of them I just perennially look for in case they come back, or in case something changed or whatever. And it never pays off. Until now.
The Sum of Us?
The Sum of Us. It's mirrored, so you can't see.
I don't know what that is.
Exactly! Because nobody fucking does, because it was a little art house film in the 90s that I only got to see at my little local art house theater as an Australian film. And it is, I don't remember what year it is, but I saw it and I loved it. I think I've talked about it on here before.
Is that Russell Crowe? Is that?
It is Russell Crowe. And it's like the second film he was ever in. It's a little baby Russell Crowe. And Jack Thompson, who is also a pretty well-known actor in certain circles. And this movie, The Sum of Us, is, well, first of all, it is based on a play, and it is very obviously based on a play. It has a lot of like monologues to the camera and stuff like that, which a lot of people fucking hate. I love it because I love plays. And so if you put a play in a movie, I like that. But The Sum of Us is the story of a widowed gentleman living with his 20-year-old gay plumber son in the 90s in Australia, which it's never a good time to be gay in Australia. In the 90s, it often wasn't a good time to be gay in Australia. But the movie is not what you would think it's about. The movie is not about a straight dad and his gay son like finding common ground and getting to understand each other. The movie is, they did that long time ago. It's the rest of the world dealing with the concept that this straight father and gay son are just cool with each other. And that, like, it's fine. And the rest of the world is confused, threatened, it's sometimes delighted by this. But it's them, and they've worked their shit out, and the rest of the world trying to deal with them. And it's really good. And it's early Russell Crowe when he really. Russell Crowe. I'm not going to say Russell Crowe's a bad actor now, but early Russell Crowe has something to it. It's you get similar early Robert Redford, things like that. There's a hunger, or even early Brando. Like they really are trying to hone their craft and really do something amazing. And they have no history of work to, take pride in. They're proving themselves to themselves. And it's really good. At least how I remember it. I haven't seen it in decades. And it never shows up anywhere. Something I saw the other day made me think, oh, I think I was trying to find a different movie and Roku hadn't even heard of it. And I was like, well, shit. And then I was like, hey, I haven't checked for The Sum of Us in like 2 years or whatever. So I looked it up and it's there. So I'm very excited about that. There's not many. This is an old run from like 06 of DVDs. There weren't that many of them, but I got one. And it cost me like $23, which for a DVD nowadays is kind of expensive, but not that much money. So I'm very excited about that.
Cool.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world where the premise is not William and I trying to deal with each other. William and I have already got that worked out. It's how you all deal with us. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 697.
We still live in a world where William's whole lifestyle and deal is villainized by most of society. I've come to accept him.
No, you
And
haven't.
you all have to learn.
You have not.
I mean, it's the closest you're gonna get, dude. Like take what you can.
Yeah, that's right. Take what I can.
This is to paraphrase the song from another hard to find movie that I used to love, if this isn't acceptance, it'll have to do until the real thing comes along.
That's
There
funny.
was a time in high school where I realized that I could go to our local art house single screen theater and never not be happy with what I was seeing. So I started going to every single show there. So I saw it. And to be fair, it was a lie. There were some things I saw that I did not enjoy. But not many. A lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, the first time I lived in a place that had a theater like that available was here in Iowa City.
Of course. In
And
other words, the second place you ever lived.
was it? Yeah, I guess it was. No, it's the third place I
Absolutely.
ever lived. When I was really young, I lived in Pleasantville. Remember Pleasantville, Iowa? I don't remember it,
Really?
but yeah.
I know Pleasantville because it's where the Amtrak station is. That's the only reason I know it.
Yeah, some people think it's pretty funny that my first hometown was Pleasantville because of
You're
Pleasantville.
such an asshole.
No,
Oh,
because
sorry, I was thinking.
that movie where Pleasantville is this idealized place. Anyway,
And it's all about racism, which you are, so yes.
anyway, the Bijou, I guess that's what's in Iowa City, right? And
No, that was the Bijou was the art house theater that was part of the university. It eventually went away, and its spiritual successor was Film Scene,
Yeah.
which was also a terrible, sad, struggling little theater in a building that it was renting. And then they built a whole new goddamn skyscraper in the middle of town, and the bottom floor of it is Film Scene, and I think it has multiple screens now. So, but the
Yeah.
Bijou does not exist anymore.
Okay, well, that part I didn't know. I didn't know the Bijou was gone because, but I did know that Film Scene was a thing and that they used Englert for a long time as where they showed films. And then, like you said, the tall building, they have a
They
theater in
went
there,
to a
but like
different place for a while because I went and saw a thing at a different one, and it had the most uncomfortable chairs, and it just was a terrible experience.
oh,
But it
yeah,
was
you're
just
right.
some room that they could rent, sort of.
Yeah. You're right about that.
They were really hanging by a thread at that
That's
point.
right. I remember that too. I never went to any of their shows when they were doing that, but I remember that. And now, like you said, they've got this whole floor or whatever. And I remember when they were first going to do that because they were talking about how, oh, there's going to be a bowling alley in this building. And everyone was like, what? Like just the floor above? I think the floor above was there's going to be a bowling alley above the movie theaters? Does that make sense? But
I
I
think it.
have seen films there. And I think you're right, there's multiple screens.
I have not actually been there.
And it's fine.
I don't go out to news very often.
But yeah, one of the things I watched at the Bijou fairly on a fairly regular basis was the when they would have the you watched some of these too, I think, where the top animated films of the
Oh
year or
yeah,
whatever
the
would be.
Academy Award short films. They would do the one night of the live action and one night of the animated. Yeah. I used to do that in high school. The art theater that I went to would also have that.
So good, so good. But but yeah, I'd also discovered the whole art house movie thing. I was like, wow, these are really good movies. And I think at first, and I guess I still feel this way a little bit. It's like it's kind of amazing that these don't get like these don't play well in a theater. I mean, I do kind of get it now, but I also kind of don't because they're actually really good movies. But I suppose they don't have popular appeal is the thing.
Some people get weird on short films, people get weird on subtitles, and people get weird on not having heard of a movie. If it doesn't
Well.
have a giant marketing campaign, what's the point?
Well, but also like some people do have a thing about, well, if I'm going to go to the theater, it's the film itself has to be some kind of spectacle, right? Like, well, I'm going to pay that money.
Which is why that's what's happening, the Jurassic World effect. Those movies sucked, and like everybody agrees, those movies sucked, and they made billions because it's still really impressive. I recently found out Trish never saw the original Jurassic Park, and I kind of want to have her see it, except it doesn't fucking matter now because it's not a great movie. Except, I mean, it's fine, it holds up better than a lot of these would, but it just was so impressive at the time. It was my generation's version of scared that the train is going to come out of the screen and run us over. Like, it was just like, it's fucking dinosaurs.
I think
Now
there's
they're
something to
kids.
be said, though, too, and you and I might have this in common, an appreciation for the theater experience. Even if what we're seeing isn't cinematic. We like that experience of seeing it on a screen with other people and stuff.
You and I definitely used to have this in common.
Yeah. Okay.
until I went full misanthrope. And yeah, now yeah. It is basically the theater going experience is pretty much like a lot of things for me nowadays, where I go to see movies in the theater when enough time has passed that I forget why I don't go see movies in the theater. And then I go see it and I'm like, oh yeah, those are the reasons. And then I don't do it again.
Yeah.
TVs are quite big and quite detailed now. I'm fine with
that. Well, and I don't go to the theater in person very much either. I still appreciate the theater experience as long as people in the theater are behaving themselves, which they don't do very much anymore. So
humanity doesn't behave itself.
You know, people have their cell phone or they'll put their feet up behind you. Like, how do you not know that your foot is like right next to my ear? What is this? Or they'll talk a lot. It's like, what are you doing? What do you not know how this works?
One foot over each shoulder, like one leg. So like my knee, the back of my knee is sitting there, and then hopefully it doesn't block their ears.
But I mean, I used to have wonderful experiences in watching movies in the theater. But anymore, it's like, no, this is, and it's always because someone around me is just doing something that I don't remember people doing, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, but now pretty routine. So
humanity's trash.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, does it makes it not very fun.
You'll learn. You'll all learn.
So I like people. You understand this, right? I mean, this is a big part of my personality.
I do.
I just like people.
I do, but I also understand that you're a smart guy. I know eventually you're going to figure it out.
No. I don't think that'll ever change. It better not, because now I'm in a profession where I better like people, or I'm not going to be very good at what I do.
I mean, maybe this happens every few years. Maybe I need to step up my abuse. Maybe if I am shitty enough to you, it brings the average down. And then you could be like, oh yeah, on the balance, people are terrible.
Maybe I'm just unbreakable like Kimmy Schmidt.
Actually, no. Here's what I think is happening, and you won't admit it. I think that exact thing does happen, and then you are so grateful to me for showing you how terrible humanity is that your estimation of me goes up, and it brings the average up again, and suddenly you think humans are okay. So it's a constant cycle.
Not pretty sure it's not that. But, I mean, you know.
I mean, who's the one with the masters in social work here? I'm asking. I genuinely don't know which one of us.
I don't have a master's in social work.
What the fuck is your master's in?
It's a master's of science in clinical mental health counseling.
That's not a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Did I tell you my therapist's entire clinic went as a group to see Inside Out 2 in the theater?
No, you didn't tell me that.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, because I guess we haven't talked since my last therapy session. Yeah.
You were going to tell me how she liked it if you...
The second one, I think she very much did. I was talking about having seen the first one, how it was really bad for me, and I kind of went on at length about it. And she had, I went on a big rant, and afterwards she's like, yeah, I haven't seen that one in a long time, so I don't remember. And I'm like, that's fine, it's fine. You don't have to... I think it's probably a good movie. It's just not a good movie for me. Also, I don't think the new one is on Disney Plus right now. I think it's some bullshit scam. Like, it's there, but if you click on it, it's just like a preview of it. Because some friends started it recently, so I hate that kind of shit. There's more and more of that where they're like, oh, yeah, here's a inside look or whatever. I'm like, no, don't put it if it's not available, punk. So how will your week be? I'll be in Virginia.
Hopefully it'll be I would love it if, like, you know, now when people see this, what I'm about to say, they'll have learned last week that I have sent stuff into various places and I'm waiting to hear back so that I can apply for licensure. I hope that the response comes soon enough that I've, by the time people see this, I will have my application into the state and that'll be going. It's pretty important to me to get the license as soon as possible. There's several reasons why.
Everything's nice and legal in case there's a death.
So I hope that's happened. I don't have any reason to think it'll move that fast, but I hope it does.
Do you have to get malpractice insurance if you're a therapist?
Liability insurance, yeah.
Yeah.
I have liability insurance now.
You can fuck people up just by talking at them. I would say it is one of my primary hobbies.
A person can claim that you did, yes. So.
Oh, I can do it.
I have
a long drive ahead of us in a few weeks. I'll teach you.
I have liability insurance now. I had to get it before I could intern even. So.
Yep. That's fair. I sometimes think you should have it just to hang out with me.
Well, you know, you know, when you're learning to be a therapist, and I've talked to enough people, you know, psychotherapists come from a lot of different traditions, medicine, psychology, social work, as you know, and counseling is another one, which comes from an education and like guidance tradition, but they all spend quite a bit of time in their training about talking about that very thing you just mentioned, which is, you know, how do you not mess a person up by something you say. On one hand, it's harder than people, including some professionals, want to make it sound like. People are more resilient than people want to think these days. Like, a lot of people want to make it sound like, you know, that everybody is really susceptible to what a person says, like to a suicidal degree. That's actually fairly rare for someone to be that that on edge. But you do have to know when they are, right? You do have to know when a person is so close to the edge that you really have to be super careful with what you say. And so there's a lot of training around that, right? But even if the person isn't going to be pushed over some edge by what you say, you still want, and you're not going to screw them up by saying a certain thing. You might not help them by saying a certain thing, right? And so you want to know what's the most helpful, what's the best practices way to ask this question or to say this thing, or are there certain things that it's best that you never say that or say it like that? A lot of the training and a lot of the conversation is around that kind of thing.
And that's why I haven't gone into the field. I just, it's my avocation. Because it takes all the fun out of it if you're trying not to fuck them up. That was the last vestige of the reason I wanted to have kids. I was like, I could do some. What I always wanted to do is have kids and just teach them the wrong definitions of certain words, but like just wildly wrong. Just some real basic shit just to see what happens.
Well, they'd fit in great in the world now.
Young people.
I don't know.
Hopefully by the point this airs, I will have been swimming a whole lot. I'm really kind of excited about Virginia this year because we probably won't have COVID. So then all the shit I didn't get to do last year, I can spend more time with my
right. Nibblings.
I can swim more. I can go out places. It should be nice. Well, stay awake longer than 4 hours a day.
I do recall last time you went, it was pretty bad.
Yeah, when everybody gets COVID, isn't that a good time? Mm-hmm. But this year. All right, I would like to talk about the second movie I've watched recently.
Yeah, let's do that.
Now it's time for it. It's Trish's idea. It was always going to be Trish's idea. We watched The Beekeeper.
Wait, who's in that?
Jason Statham.
Oh. You watched that?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I guess that's not, I mean, you like John Wick, so.
I mean, ish.
Okay. I suppose that
It's
could.
funny you should mention that because if you like John Wick, you still might not like this. But it's clear the people who made this like John Wick.
Okay. See, I don't know.
No, here's the thing. It's a fun movie despite itself. Like
Okay.
it is a ridiculous film. I'm going to spoil some things here because why the fuck would it matter? Jason Statham is a beekeeper.
Like a real beekeeper.
Yes, lowercase b, just a beekeeper.
And someone killed his bees, and now he has to exact revenge.
No. John Wick's puppy in this version is Felicia Rashad.
Oh,
Because
gosh.
his next door neighbor, who he's very close to, is old lady Felicia Rashad. And then she gets internet scammed and they steal all of her money and she fucking kills herself. Just like instantly.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we do not waste time here. She's like, they took all my money. That sucks. Bang, dead.
Whoa.
And Jason Statham is so much faster than John Wick's puppy. Like, so much less of this movie happens. And it's a much shorter movie than John Wick also. And so Jason Statham is like, well, fuck this shit. I'm gonna go ruin things. And that's when we find out Jason Statham is not only a beekeeper with a lowercase b, he's also a beekeeper with a capital B. And we eventually find out via exposition dump later in the film, the beekeepers are a very long-standing extra governmental organization of sleeper cells who are designed to quote unquote protect the hive. And basically, if American society starts to fall apart, they do whatever they deem necessary to repair it. Except Jason Statham is a retired beekeeper. And he's gone fucking rogue. And then he just murders everybody. There is another twist later. I'll save it just because it doesn't make the story any better to tell you. And so it's something to do. But there is way less action in it. But there is quite a bit of action. We work real hard to make the bad guys unredeemably awful. Like we work like sort of to a silly degree, make sure that we don't at all feel bad about these dudes dying. Except there's also a lot of times where it's just like random security guards and shit, and they get toasted. There are times where like he deliberately doesn't kill them. And we make a point of that, but it glosses over all the time. He very clearly has killed them. It's ridiculous. If you want a mindless action film, that's what this is. But what I especially love about it is it goes hard on the 80s and 90s action movie to the degree that the script could very easily, especially the dialogue, could easily have been written by an AI who was fed only 80s and 90s action movies. Like, the script is so generic and so utilitarian. Like the cop has a line that lets you know about this part of their backstory. And then there's this line later that lets you know, like, it's all, every line is just to very obviously telegraph what's going to happen next and what the stakes are. It is a very efficient movie. And I found myself laughing, not so much at the somewhat creative action sequences, but just at the dialogue, all the conversations between people. Just hilariously generic. It's amazing. Like, if you told me every line in this movie is actually a line from a different action movie, I would believe you. And it has Jeremy Irons, and it has Felicia Rashad for a little bit, and it's Jason Statham. It has an actor whose name I don't know, but she plays Catherine Lethbridge Stewart, the current head of UNIT in Doctor Who right now, and she's in this. And also an actor who I've seen a lot of things, who is the third oldest in Umbrella Academy, the I Heard a Rumor girl. Her power is all about telling people she heard rumors and it makes it happen. And I've seen her in a lot of things lately. I think she is quite a good actor. She's in a lot of garbage. And not just like a movie that was bad like this, but like movies that were always going to be bad, like real low budget bullshit ones. That it's like, no, there's never going to be good. So that is weird, but yeah. So Beekeeper is included with Prime right now. We didn't spend no money on it.
It's such a thin premise.
It really is.
Like,
We do play with it a little bit. We come up with some things later, but just Felicia Rashad was clearly hanging. She seemed very happy right before this point, but this happened. And to be fair, it's not just her personal account. She handled the charity. We don't even know what the charity was, but it was a charity, and she was a signatory, and it had 2 million in it, and they cleared that out as well. And so she just right away, it's like, oh, it's done. So, like, in terms of her agency, she's on par with John Wick's puppy.
but I mean, if like revenge, like a hitman's revenge is simple. It gets the job done. It's not complicated. But to make the person one of these government or
No, outside the government.
outside, yeah, it's like
Beekeepers. He's not a
this.
hitman.
I mean,
He
how
does what needs to be done.
it just raises a lot of questions. Like, how do they know when the government is like what line has to be crossed before they're activated? And also, when that happens, how do they know to come back? It's like, wait, what?
Well,
How does this work?
we hint at some of that.
Oh.
Again, why the fuck is spoiler? So, Jeremy Irons is in the movie, and he's based. At first, we assume. So, also like John Wick, we have a sniveling little asshole rich boy who is the one who's caused all this trouble, who's clearly the son of somebody more powerful, we eventually find out. And he has, I assumed it was his dad, but apparently it's just sort of his handler. That's this guy that's like the ex-head of the CIA, but now he's in the private sector. And so he's trying to like make calls to clean it up. And he actually contacts the beekeepers. And they say, yeah, okay, we'll send the current active beekeeper to take care of him. And
So,
then Jason Statham fucking murders the current active beekeeper. And then the beekeeper group call back and say, yeah, we've decided we're going to stay out of this one. We're just going to see what happens. Click.
okay. So they're invited, like someone in the establishment or representing the establishment says, "Hey, things have gone wrong," and call them. And then they
Yes.
decide by some criteria if they're going to help or not.
Yes.
Okay.
They're like, this former beekeeper you had isn't beekeeping properly. And they're like, we agree. We're gonna send our current beekeeper after him. Oh, he killed them. Well, shit. Have fun, dog.
So part of my confusion is, how do you know when someone's gone rogue, really? But it's, they decide just arbitrarily.
Jeremy Irons calls somebody who calls you.
Right. It's just more arbitrary BS. Okay. But see, to me, it makes more sense, like plot wise and every other world building wise, if it's like the whole assassin thing or even an organization of assassins, that makes more sense to me than just, today we're going to decide.
Jason Statham keeps saying, "I protect the hive," in a way that absolutely sounds like that's a hypnotic trigger phrase that was drilled into it.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. Sounds also really stupid. And this is my favorite part, and this is what I could not get over. To be a beekeeper with a capital B, you have to be an absolute badass assassin. Whatever. You presumably have to have a lot of combat and espionage skills. Do you also have to be an actual beekeeper?
Like in the movie.
Because he's way into beekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one of the things that pushes over is they break up his hive and everything. And that's, So either the answer is yes, which is amazing. Like, we are hiring the best of the best to get things done when no one else can. Also, they have to be super into bees. Which part of the interview happens first? Like, do you make sure they're into bees and then that they can fight?
I mean,
or is it the other way around?
In the golden age of comic books, this would all make perfect sense.
Is there a phase? Do you get taught beekeeping as part of the orientation? Or the second version, where regular beekeeping has nothing to do with it, and Jason Statham just happens to be the one beekeeper who's also a beekeeper. Which is, like, did they make fun of him? I feel like you'd get bullied amongst beekeepers if you were the only one who was like, they're like, dude, you get it's a metaphor, right? I mean, you get that we're not, I'm protecting the hive. Yeah, no. But, like, that's not the hive. The hive is just, oh, man, we should retire him. Clearly, he's not. Like, either option is insane. I love it. It's a Dave's Killer Bread sort of catch 22 here.
So really, this group, they're just mercenaries. They're maybe specialized in that they'll only take certain types of jobs that are called in by certain kinds of people.
I don't know if they get paid, or they just do it for love of the game.
Well, whatever. But, I mean, they're not...
We get no background.
Yeah, they're just... really, they are just assassins like everyone else. They're just very specialized. They're like, well, we're only going to do this kind of thing when we're called by this kind of person for this kind of job. But they're just assassins. Yeah. I mean,
I will also say this. We had held up this movie. We were going to watch this movie. But this was going to be a movie we watched while high. Because, of course, it was. And then Trish texted me that evening, and she says, I don't particularly want to get high tonight, but for some reason I really want to watch The Beekeeper. And I said, okay. I said, do you mind if I do? Because I think I'll enjoy it more. And she said, that's fine. So, take my review with a grain of salt. But, it was a fun time. As long as you keep your expectations super, super low. It's a fun, silly, ridiculous action movie.
Surprisingly, I think I would
so. Which I'm really is what I've heard from a lot of people, is that it was surprising that it was actually pretty fun. It's not good by any stretch, but it's fun. And some of it's funny on purpose. The our main police protagonist has a partner who has a lot of quips that land pretty well. That's fine. Anyway, give us another email from our Iowa Welsh dude.
Stu wants to know, which book have you reread the most?
Anarchist Cookbook.
I think you've said this about yourself, and I don't know if I've said it, but it's definitely true. There's very, very few things that I revisit, even things I like. I mean, I can talk about movies that I remember a lot of stuff that happened in them, and I clearly like them, but I've only seen them once, like in the theater or something. So, and books especially, I rarely ever read a book more than once.
But I was just thinking about another movie the other day that I'm like, I've actually seen that several times, and there's very few movies like that. But I can't remember what it was now. No, I very rarely will reread books. And in fact, my attempts usually fail. I have had a book that I really loved, and like 10, 20 years later, I'm like, I should read that again. Couldn't get through it. But there are exceptions. The exceptions fall into a variety of categories here. One is audiobooks. Sometimes I will read a book and then later listen to the audiobook, or the other way around sometimes. Also, reading to someone else, usually Trish, will become a thing. So I might read a book and like it, and then I'll read it to her. And so that counts as rereading it. And so to that end, I think there is a book that, depending on your definition, I have read four times. And I think it's two different audio versions, one regular, one full cast. Once myself as a book, and once reading to Trish as a book. And that is The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman. I'm a big fan of that book. But yeah, not too many. I've had a lot of, like, I have started Fellowship of the Ring like five times. I have finished Fellowship of the Ring zero times.
I read The Graveyard Book, but just once.
I really like it. It hits some very sweet spot for me. And for all that it is a children's book, which normally would put me off right away. And I think it is. I don't even think it's a young adult. I think it's a children's book. That's a great book.
There are books I've read more than once. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and Bram Stoker's Dracula. I've read both of those more than once. I've read Jekyll and Hyde more than once. I've read, but I don't know if I've read any of them three times.
Yeah, I don't get a lot that I've read three.
The only thing I can think of that I've read three times is the Bible. I've read the Bible three times.
Both Testaments.
What's that?
Both Testaments?
Yeah.
Dang.
Three times.
One time I tried to read the New Testament, and it started with all the beginning, and I bailed just right away.
But I don't think I've read anything else three times or more. I don't think. Unless I have read Frankenstein. I wouldn't. I mean, if someone said, oh, no, you've read Frankenstein three times, I would believe them, because I've, you know, that wouldn't surprise me, but I don't remember reading it a third time. I only remember reading it twice. But
William, you've read Frankenstein three times.
I mean, a credible person.
Slam! Got him. Oh, that was rough.
Although technically you should be credible, because if I've probably talked about it on here every time I've read it.
I don't listen to you.
And not the first time, maybe. I don't know.
I didn't even know you liked Frankenstein.
Shut up.
I'm trying to think. There's probably something that I've read three times because, like, I read it, and then
Yeah.
years later I read it, and then I read it to Trish.
Right. I feel like, that's something like that's true for me too, I feel like. But
and some books were like I didn't finish the series, so when I went back, I started over again.
Right, that kind
not
of thing
much
too.
Time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That seems
But
like that's
not many.
happened, but
I know I read all the all 10 Chronicles of Amber to Trish after I had read them. We used to read each other books a lot. So, I'm looking over at my bookshelves. But yeah, it doesn't come up a lot. I highly recommend Graveyard Book. And then there's other, like, I think I've only read Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman once. But I read the book once. I listened to the audiobook once. I listened to a full cast recording once. I watched the TV show maybe twice. And I read the graphic novel couple times, so I've experienced a lot of that one.
I think I read Myself and Society three times at least, and that's nonfiction, obviously. It's you know, George Herbert Mead lectures and stuff. I've read that three times, I think, and if maybe there are a few other nonfiction books I've read at least two times.
No, but definitely not.
No.
As years go on, I am realizing that my connection to media is very strongly tied to my place in my life at the time, for good or for bad. Such that there are things that really are huge for me that years later, if I go back to it, it doesn't feel the same.
You don't think that's the same for everybody?
I don't know. A lot of people like to go back over things over and over again, and people have favorite bits of media that they stick with forever. And I will sometimes say that, but like, I won't revisit it because I think it's going to change my view on it.
Oh.
Because I had the reaction. I mean, I do think where you are in your life does impact how you hold things, but like, it's very ephemeral for me. In the moment, I felt this way watching, reading, listening to this thing. 10 years from now, very different. For good, for bad, whatever, it's just going to be very different. For a long time, I always said not to harp on Gaiman again, but I was really obsessed with Gaiman for quite a while. American Gods was the one I listed as my favorite book ever. A couple years ago, I had an audiobook of it and tried to listen to it again, and I couldn't last. And it had been a long time. Like, it's not like it was like, oh, I just know how this all goes. I just didn't feel it the same way.
You know, the funny thing about that, American Gods, I read that when we both worked together.
Yeah.
But it was recommended to me by someone other than you. Yeah.
You know I feel about you talking to people that aren't me?
I remember who recommended it to me, and it was not you. And I don't know if that was before you were on my team and stuff or what. It seems like
it's not like Neil Gaiman was some sort of buried treasure.
I know, but except for you and this person suggested this particular thing to me because they thought I would like it. I'm not sure they liked it. They thought I would like it. So yeah, I mean, you're one of the only, well, and Jazz, you and Jazz both. But other than that, I don't really know anyone else who's most of the people I know probably don't even know who he is.
Yeah.
But
Dresden Files.
Yeah, you read that to Trish, so that's probably one that.
Well, and I went back and redid some of it.
Yeah, right. Right.
Cuz I was just curious. Like, I after a certain point I was like, "I'm going to go back and from the beginning and try it." And then that's when I found out that like there's a very steep curve of quality. Like the first book seems good until you've read a bunch of the books, and then the first book seems kind of shitty. But it's also a good example of, so a friend of mine just recently discovered them on his own, and so we were geeking out about that a little bit. And he has written 18 novels in the main series. Supposedly there's 20, 23, something like that he has planned, and then a final trilogy that's going to be the end of the world, I think. It has been a long time since he's written any of them. I do not know that I will read any more of them. I adored the Dresden Files. It was a huge influence on me, and in terms of writing, and in terms of what I consume, and in terms of my views on fantasy and stuff like that. I love the role-playing game. I've run it a couple times, which can't be said of a lot of the games out there. I think it's a different me. I don't think I'm the person who would be into it anymore. I don't know. We'll have to see it. But also, I'm not going to reread the previous 18 books to remember where the fuck I was.
So, I mean, that's interesting what you say. Like, I can't think of anything that I was into at one time that I'm not into now.
Yeah, see, my life is loaded with that stuff.
Yeah, I
And
don't,
vice
you're,
versa.
yeah, you're right. I don't, I mean, I'm think I'm obviously I'm into some of, if I was into something when I was a kid and I'm still into it now, which I probably am, it's different. But there's not like a, nah, I don't like that anymore. It's just, there's nothing really like that. That's interesting.
In a lot of cases, it's like, oh yeah, that's way more problematic than that can be.
Sure. Sure.
But also just I still struggle with this some because in a certain way, I feel like I've always been the same person. Like I grow and change,
Yeah.
and everybody does.
Sure.
But if I stop for a second and look back at teenage me, 20s me, as a very different guy, and my interests, my views on like yeah. I and not a guy I like.
Well, your
And
journey.
am I an outgrowth of that person? Yes, but I'm not that person. I mean,
Your journey is one of the things I find interesting about your journey that I find super unusual. In fact, I'm not sure I've met anyone else that this is true about. But
getting away with
like,
murder? Oh,
no,
sorry. Unrelated. Go ahead. What was
I
it?
know plenty of people like that. But what the like, I'm not sure quite how to contextualize it because what I was about to say seems like an oversimplification, but maybe I'll just say it that way. Like your changes in your religious outlook, your spiritual outlook and things, I've known people that have had complex journeys that way, but yours is, well, for example, most people who I knew who were, say, Christian 20 years ago are still Christian now. I mean, there's some exceptions, but maybe they'll go from being Christian to atheist. That's not too unusual. But like, yours is so much more complicated than that. And
Nobody goes non-practicing Christian to Buddhist to agnostic to witch to atheist.
it's even, and that's even oversimplifying it, right? Like, yeah, I don't know anyone else that even that superficial a description, I don't know anyone else that has that, or when you really understand the depth of what you're describing, it's certainly not. I don't know anyone else like that. I'm not saying there aren't people like that, but I haven't personally known. And you know me, when I get to know someone, I get to know all that stuff about them and their journey and all that, because I'm interested in it. And usually it's either they're the same thing they were when they started, or there's one thing they changed, or whatever. But like, yeah, all your whole thing is very complicated in a way I've never known anyone else to be.
I I mean, it probably a lot ties into some of my bipolar tendencies, but I fuck up a lot in life. And so then I try and adjust and change. And I've gone through so many cycles of thinking, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I should talk about this. So I've been going through some old boxes recently because we're still, Trish's office is still in the process of getting the stuff up. She's found some, she's like, I think this is your shit. So I take it and I go through it. And I went through a bunch the other day. Found some really fascinating things. Old childhood stuffed animals, old porn, a really cool Arrowbee. Remember Arrowbee? I found one of those. But I also found a shit ton of handwritten mailed letters from so many people that appear to be my early college days, including people who I didn't even think I was friends with in high school, but they wrote me like three different letters at various points, and people who I genuinely don't remember, who like on the return address it said so and so the object of your desire, and I'm like, I'm not even sure who this is. And they wrote me a bunch. Shocking number of people praying for me. Just all sorts of stuff. But in the process, I found another letter sealed by me. Because I think I've talked about this before. When I had my tonsils out over spring break or maybe winter break of my sophomore year in college, it went very badly. It was a saga. There was a lot of blood loss. There was some really scary times in the ER. And the story ends with, and a year later, my blood levels were finally back to normal.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a pretty fucked up time. It was also when I had just really gotten into being neo-pagan. And so the night before the surgery, I took myself through sort of a guided meditation of the process. And convinced myself I thought I was probably going to die during the surgery. So I wrote several, in the event of my death, give this note to people, letters. And I found one that I apparently never gave that was sealed, that went to somebody I ended up dating quite a bit for quite a few years off and on, but at the time had been dating not very long, a few months maybe. And also I was poly at the time, so it was one of several people I was dating. And I tasked them with carrying out my final wishes. And it was wild. I had her giving away a bunch of stuff of mine to various people. And a lot of kissing. I had her giving a lot of people kisses from me. Apparently, I was very into kissing at the time. But what I really noticed is this thing was full of me telling her basically what was wrong with everybody and how whatever I was going to have given would help them to be. I thought I had everybody pegged. Like, this person needs to trust themselves. This person needs, like, all these things. And I was just confident that I knew these things and that I was giving and giving them this thing that would help them with that and encouraging her to do, like, and I'm just, that is a very common thing in history for me. I think I know fucking everything. And over the years, I go through cycles where I get more and more confident about that, and then things happen to lead me to believe that I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. And it's only in very recent years that I've really articulated that and gone to therapy to learn, like, this is my brain is fucked up in ways that I assumed everybody's is, and they are not. But I think that's, I think this is some of it is that I screw up a lot, and then I have to learn and adjust. But also, despite the fact that I kind of fear change, I get bored very easily and I stagnate very easily. I don't like things always being the same. And so that becomes some of it, I think, is just stuff changes. So I'll watch or read something from before, and my brain's kind of like, yeah, no, I already did this. There are exceptions, but like the movies that I have seen repeatedly are not movies that I seek out to see repeatedly. And they're not usually movies that mean a lot to me. They're just a fun time. Great example being Beyond Thunderdome. I think I've seen Beyond Thunderdome like 4 or 5 times, which is more than I've seen almost every other movie. And it's not because I think it's a good movie. This is a fun time.
I think the same's true for me. Most of the time I can say I've seen a movie many times. It wasn't even my idea. It was like I was somewhere or, oh, you haven't seen this? Well, sure, we can watch that, you know. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to watch it 15 times. It's just how it happened. Yeah. And of course,
But
when
yeah.
you have kids, you see a lot of things multiple times that you wouldn't ordinarily see multiple times.
It is fun occasionally watching things with parents or with like new parents or whatever. I have nothing to do with modern children's programming or anything, but it's fun to see what things parents hate or love or whatever. So like in the current one, here's what I know for sure. Bluey is the best show in the world. Bluey is a children Australian children's show. It's hugely popular. Everybody loves it. Paw Patrol, very middle of the road. Everybody watches Paw Patrol. It's fine. Nobody's really into Paw Patrol. And CoComelon is the worst thing in the world. These are the benchmarks I know of children's programming. In my day, aka the couple of times I ever babysat the neighbors next door, I watched a lot of Dora the Explorer. I watched a lot of Strawberry Shortcake. Which I'm happy to see.
We watched a lot of Blue's Clues,
Okay.
and Barney was big back then, but we didn't watch it. And
Yeah.
Teletubbies was big back then, but we didn't watch that either.
I watched Teletubbies. You know who was super into Teletubbies? My, at the time, 60-year-old father.
What?
I don't
Are
know.
you
He's
seriously?
super into it. He thought it was hilarious. I was in London and I found a Teletubby like shampoo bottle or whatever. And I bought it for it was literally, I saw it in a window. It was in like a baby store or something, like where you buy like onesies and shit. And I went and I got it. And they're like, oh, it's so adorable. I said, yeah, it's for my 60-year-old dad. They were like, what? I was like, yeah, he's really into Teletubbies. I don't know why, but he is. And he was super happy when I got it for him.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious.
Yeah. I was into it too, but in a way, like, I wish I was on drugs because this would be a good thing to watch while on drugs.
Yeah,
Like,
we
I don't know.
didn't.
My family was very big for quite a while. My whole family, if we screwed something up, we'd say, uh-oh.
Really?
Which is a thing that they say. Yeah. We were a Teletubby household. We had nobody under the age of 20, but we were a Teletubby household. Years later, on a big fat quiz of the 90s or so, I don't know. During the big fat quiz, they always have a round where there's a special guest, and you have to the panelists have to ask yes or no questions to figure out who they are. And this one, it turned out, was the son, the baby son, all grown up. It was this girl, and she was, yeah. And somebody caught it because like she smiled, and they're like, "Holy shit, I know that smile!" And they pulled it out.
Wow.
Yeah, the little sun baby.
That's amazing.
All right, if you like Teletubbies, tell us about it. Teletubby us about it. Tell a bus about it in the comments on this YouTube video, or go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghead.com, and talk to us because we are so lonely. Also, write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com because we like talking about your things more than we like talking about our things. I should rephrase that. I like talking about your things more than I like talking about William's things. And William gets no vote. So yeah, write us and for us, it will have been a while since the next one, but for you, it'll just be next week, because that's how time works.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.